Oh, hi, podcast listeners. There's many ways you can listen to the Real Nerds Podcast. You can subscribe on iTunes. You can also subscribe on Stitcher Radio. You want to send us a Twitter message? You can do that. It's so easy, at Real Nerds. Like us on Facebook, Real Nerds Podcast. You can visit our website, realnerdspodcast.com, where there'll be a lot of articles for you to not only read, but to listen to our previous shows. Do you like your stories told through pictures? Then you can also follow us at Real Nerds on Instagram. You can also call us, 720-6NERDS5. Thanks for listening and enjoy the show.
Camera, action!
Well, a real nerd knows who shot, and a real nerd can follow the plot, and a real nerd
doesn't
can...
Doesn't talk film! I'm sorry.
Take it outside.
Well, a real nerd knows who shot, and a real nerd can follow the plot, and a real nerd will give it all they got. Lights, camera, action!
Hey everyone, welcome to Real Nerds Podcast. We are the best movie podcast on the internet. I am joined, as always, by my partner in crime, Brad.
What's
How's
up?
How's it going?
Oh, you know it. Just getting ready for this friggin' con.
I know. Hopefully our booth will go over well. Some insider, I haven't revealed what we're doing. We're doing Pizza Hut this year. From the 90s. Hopefully it will go well. That's all I have to say.
Yeah, and we've got that panel to do, so hopefully that goes well.
I know. I don't have a lot of faith in it because it's July 4th at 6 p.m., and who's going to come see us July 4th at 6 p.m.?
Just the weirdest people, I think.
Most likely.
Or has that been told, the least patriotic people? Traitors to this country will not be celebrating. They'll be at our panel.
Yeah. Good. Every week, we see a new movie and we podcast our experience to the world. This week, we saw The Bike Riders. Stay tuned, where we will recommend the film or not, play the trailer, and then spoil the movie. We'll also talk about movies we watched throughout the week and more nerd ramblings. Brad, how are you this week of June 21st?
Like I said, just scrambling to get this booth done so we can have an awesome con. And I've been like, you know, every waking hour, just either driving somewhere to buy materials or staying up late to make a prototype of something that I don't know how to do, like the, you know, chandelier, which I wasn't going to do at all. But then everything
Wait,
else.
Whoa. You're going to do a chandelier? Why don't you just buy one?
Because they're like $300 and they don't say Real Nerds on them.
But how much is your time worth, Brad? That's the most important question.
It's very, very valuable, but to Real Nerds, it's priceless.
Perfect. Well, you know what? I bet not only are you going to make it, but it's going to look so great, people are going to be confused at the con, and they're going to want to order pizza from us.
That's my goal. That's what I hope. I hope I just completely... I just want to see bewildered looks from people that just can't stretch their brain just a little bit. And see what, like, yeah,
perfect.
What we're doing.
That's what I love to hear. Hey, Brad, we saw Bike Rider, quote unquote, this week. Wait, I even said it wrong. It's technically The Bike Riders. Brad, do you recommend The Bike Riders?
It's fine. It wasn't that interesting to me. And the movie kind of just holds your hand the whole time. Really, there's like a narrative that just says, like, here's what happened. And then you're just kind of along for the ride, so to speak. So, but yeah, there's nothing that really stood out or surprised me that much. But the acting is fantastic. So there's that.
Yeah, I'm in the same boat. It's a fine movie. But there was nothing narrative wise or, you know, story wise or character wise that I was that shocked when I was watching. I think you said it best, to kind of hold your hand and you're just literally, it feels like you're just in the moment, just hanging out with these dudes. I don't know.
Yeah.
Hey, here's a trailer for The Bike Riders.
I built this for nothing.
So you're the man in charge.
I'm Johnny.
This is our family.
Who's that good-looking guy over at the pool table?
I'm Benny.
Hello? 5 weeks later, I married him.
Hey!
Told you to take that jacket off.
You'd have to kill me to get this jacket off.
I don't want any trouble.
What about the bar? Burn it down.
The club is changing.
We ain't gonna follow nobody except somebody who can hold their own.
Is that who we are now?
If he keeps riding, he's gonna die one way or another.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I need you.
Some people would rather crash than slow down.
The Bike Rider follows the gang that motorcycle gang that's put together by Tom Hardy in Chicago, and it kind of charts their path from the not even early conception, because when we meet the Vandals, they're already kind of a motorcycle gang. But the formation of when Jodie Comer's character, who I can't remember her name, comes into the... Yeah, see? I mean, you saw this movie a lot more recent than I did. I saw it a premiere of it a couple weeks ago, so my memory is a little fuzzy here on June 21st.
Oh, wow. That's a rare Ryan saw it before me thing. Interesting.
Yeah. I mean, that's probably why I can't remember the main character's name.
Yeah. I got you.
Thank you.
I memorized them all. So
perfect. So Eddie Brock is also, he's the leader of the motorcycle gang. And it just follows, I mean, all kidding aside, it follows Benny, who's Austin Butler, and he's kind of the quiet rebel guy. And they even talk about how even Johnny, who runs the gang, is jealous of Benny because he just doesn't care.
He's just too cool for anybody.
He really is. And so it really is. It's just Kathy telling the story about how she met, fell in love, fell out of love with Benny, and then it picks up like right there. I only know a little bit about the backstory for this because I saw it at the Alamo, and they had a their pre-show, they had a little bit about the book and stuff. So it was a book that this guy wrote and took pictures of this actual motorcycle gang and what happened to them. And it was, I mean, like I said, and you said, it's, there's a lot in this movie, but it doesn't really feel like anything happens, if that makes any sense. I don't know.
Yeah, there's no surprise, because the interviewer Danny, he's interviewing Kathy the whole time, so it's Kathy's doing all the narrative dialogue over everything, and she's just explaining in a very linear fashion everything that happens. So yeah, you're just sitting there listening to her talk, and then everything just kind of transpires as you expect. There's no like time jumping around or I don't know, like any twist to anything. So
no, and then even like the bad guys, the kids who want to join the motorcycle gang, you knew that they were gonna kill Johnny, because just the way they're framed on camera and their attitude, you know what I mean? Even his death didn't shock me.
Yeah, I kind of saw it coming, because I was like, well, I mean, this is either gonna go one of two ways, and yeah, I don't. Either one's not surprising, but yeah, it's kind of the classic. It's almost like Goodfellas. It's like the classic thing of like,
yeah,
too big, and then the guy at the top couldn't hang on to all the strings, and then it just lost control of everything. So then the next generation took over.
I mean, there's some fun parts. I really like, it's kind of early in the film when Benny is running from the police and he runs out of gas and gets arrested.
Yeah,
that's pretty funny.
When Norman Reedus shows up and just like kind of joins the gang, and no one's quite sure what to make of him.
Because that part was fun when he said he came for that guy and he was going to kill him. And he's like, oh, I'm not going to do it because I don't want to. And, you know, the fight at the picnic where they beat each other's asses and then they kind of stop and become friends. I mean, there's some fun moments, but, and it's, I mean, it's well shot. It's well acted. I don't know. I guess I was never, you know, stuff like Easy Rider and movies like that never really moved the needle for me.
Yeah. Bike culture is not like a thing for me. So.
Yeah. And I mean, yeah, like you said, the actors are great. And I mean, they all look cool, but it's just, it is what it is for me. You know, I could never, I don't know the right wording, but it's a fine film. I don't think you have to see it in theaters. I think it's one of those ones you could definitely stream and you're not missing much because there's no like bombastic score or anything, you know?
Yeah. See it in a theater if you want to hear like the best version of motorcycles, I guess, but
yeah. The best part of the bike riders for me was I was the only one in the theater. I went, I lied earlier. I did not see this early for a premiere. I actually saw this. I know I lied. I saw this the week after with A Quiet Place because I had to work so many hours and I just couldn't fit in a 2.5 hour long motorcycle movie.
You're a phony. Really cool. You're a big phony.
Wow, that's a deep cut on a joke.
I've been watching a lot of Family Guy lately.
Yeah, it's great. So it's really funny. I'll just tell this story because it's interesting. So I actually saw A Quiet Place first, and I was the only one in the theater for A Quiet Place. And I ordered a Coke Zero and popcorn and, you know, Coke Zero, you get refills for free at the Alamo. But I didn't think it could transfer movies, you know what I mean? So I moved from A Quiet Place to The Bike Riders, and I was the only one in The Bike Riders too. And I had the same server, and she came in, and she said, hey, do you just want a refill on your popcorn and soda? And I said, I can do that. She said, you're the only one in this whole theater, these last two movies, like the whole Alamo Draft House. I was like, okay. So it's pretty nice of her. So. And I was all by myself for two straight movies. It was kind of awesome.
Damn. Living the dream.
I know. And it happened again. I'll have to tell you about it in the future. Not now, because we are definitely recording this not 3 weeks late. And I'll tell you another story in 2 weeks' time. And you'll go back and be like, wow, it's like a connecting tissue. I'm like the MCU of seeing movies lately. But yeah, that's what I got for Bike Riders. Did I miss anything, Brad? Anything you want to share?
Yeah, no, I think that covers it. Yeah, it's just, that's pretty much all that happened.
Sweet. Hey, we watch things throughout the week in a segment I call What We've Been Watching.
So, this is the stuff we've been watching.
Brad, what'd you watch this week?
Oh, gosh. I mean, even though I'm working on this booth pretty hard, I still managed to put in a few screenings of things at home. Let's see. Cool. I saw a French film called Fantastic Planet. Have you ever seen that?
No, but I know it's a really famous sci-fi film.
Yeah, it's a weird animation thing. Very much in the style of like, you know, like the, like in Monty Python, like the animated cutout parts.
Yeah.
Like that style. Very similar to that. About
you know,
like
the Criterion of it.
Yeah, exactly. Like I watched the Criterion of it. And yeah, it's just about like this, planet that has a ruling class and a, peasant class, and the ruling class, eventually he tries to exterminate them, and a lot of the movie is the peasant creatures trying to escape and then eventually fight back. And that's it. And it's just kind of weird and surreal animation stuff from, back in the 1970s. So, yeah.
Is it a movie you'd recommend people see?
I mean, I think if you like really niche artistic films, I guess. I wouldn't say, as far as animation goes, like, hey, you should show this to Kellen. You know, it's just very weird. Like, in the vein of Heavy Metal or the animations from Monty Python stuff. Yeah.
Gotcha.
And it's not terribly exciting either. The music's quirky. But the story's just kind of weird and hard to follow. Cause everything in the movie's just, hey, here's a normal thing. How can we make it weird? Yeah. The other thing I watched was a movie called, also from a Criterion Collection, called Kuroneko.
Oh, what is that? I've never even heard of that.
Yeah, it's a Japanese film from 1968. Mm-hmm. There's these samurais, who are wandering through the forest, and they wander onto this house that's haunted by women. And then they're actually cats, black cats. So Kuroneko. They just kind of lure these samurais into their house and kill them.
Cause the samurais want some pussy.
Yeah. I always thought ninjas were the assassins, and then samurais were proud warrior types. But in this movie, they just pillage and rape women in villages. So that's why this one house, they're luring the men in to kill them. And it's all in black and white, and there's some really cool special effects of compositing, which is really impressive for 1968. And it's just weird and moody and all in black and white. So probably definitely on Zach's list somewhere.
Black and white, moody. Yeah, sounds like something he'd watch.
Yeah. Yeah, just a big revenge movie.
I'm always down for revenge movies.
Yeah.
I think the Japanese do them really well. I watched Lady Snowbird and The Return of Lady Snowbird, which is also on Criterion. And they're not, I don't want to say they're not great movies, but they're just really cool revenge movies, and they're shot really cool. And I mean, there's one scene that's right in the beginning where she just slices and dices all these dudes in snow, so blood splatters everywhere. Japanese cinema is really cool at doing that kind of film.
Yeah.
Yeah. that's my extent of Japanese cinema, is they're good at revenge thrillers.
Yeah. Anime and revenge thrillers. That's what I've got. Obviously, Ninja Scroll. great example of that.
I saw that coming back to the theater, too.
Yeah?
I know. I'm going to have to go see it in the theater. I've never seen it in theater. It'd be fun. Maybe I'll take Corinne to see my style of anime into the theater.
I know. I think I saw it as a Midnight at the Mayan back in the early 2000s. It was awesome.
Really?
Yeah. Wow.
I wonder what Corinne would say if she saw Ninja Scroll.
I don't think she would like it.
No, I don't think so either.
It'd be fun.
I don't know if it's the dude banging the chick from behind or the serpent coming out of the woman's vagina. I don't know what part she wouldn't like the most, but...
Or the dude's face getting cut in half and then sliding off.
Oh, no, that's awesome. I mean, everybody likes that shit.
No, I like it. I'm just saying she wouldn't.
No, okay, cool.
So what'd you watch?
A couple things. I watched a Charlie Chaplin film I've never seen, but I meant to see it for the longest time. Do you even watch silent films, Raz? Is that something that interests you at all? I know you made a couple student films where it's stop motion and they're silent. But
absolutely not. Film cannot exist without sound. So that's my stance.
Yeah.
No, of course. Less dialogue the better. As a rule.
I wasn't sure if you watch Charlie Chaplin films or not.
It's not like they're very available. So,
no, some of them are on Criterion. Those are the ones I always
But you have to buy the Criterion for like $40. Come on, man.
False. You wait until there's a sale like this month at Barnes & Noble. I mean, next month at Barnes & Noble. And they're half off.
So easy. Just wait to a specific time of the year.
Yeah, and I'll let you know a secret. It's only July and November is the Criterion half off sale at Barnes & Noble. So just remember that.
Yeah.
So City Lights is one of his most famous films, and for some reason I had never seen it. And I'm doing this thing in case this is your first Real Nerds episode, is I have 321 and counting Blu-rays I've owned and I haven't watched. So I just wrote them all down randomly and I assigned them a number from 1 to 321. So they're not in alphabetical order at all. It's just totally random. And then I do a random number generator and I take that number and then I see what movie it is. And this happened to be one of them. And in it, Charlie Chaplin, of course, plays the tramp. He has no money, but he sees a blind woman who is selling flowers. And so he kind of falls in love with her and buys one flower. And he eventually becomes friends with a super rich guy. But the rich guy is only friends with him when he's drunk and doesn't remember that he's friends with him. But basically, it's just silly physical comedy. But it has a really sweet story with the flower girl. It's just a cute film and you have to see. And the cool thing about Chaplin is not only did he act in him, but he's a writer, director. He also wrote the music. He did pretty much everything on these films. It's pretty impressive when you watch him. And it's a really cute movie, and the Criterion's great. It has a couple cool documentaries on it. The other thing I watched is The First Omen, which came out in movie theaters, but I did not go see it. But it popped up on Hulu, because the Omen series, they're either hit or miss, and the trailer really didn't do anything for me. But after it came out, it actually has a really high Rotten Tomatoes score, and people were talking about how scary the movie is. And I watched it, and it's good. Brad, do you get scared in movies anymore?
Not really.
I know. I can't even just think about the time where a movie made me feel uneasy. But the movie's actually pretty good. It deals with this nun. It's a lot like Immaculate. that came out also this year. This nun goes to what are the nun places? I don't remember. Basically,
monastery.
It's an orphanage. Yeah, there we go. But it has children or young girls that are orphans, and they take care of them. While she's there, lots of crazy stuff happens, and she is what is real, what isn't real, who's really evil, kind of unwinds from there. And I mean, the title gives it away. It takes place obviously before the Omen. And so you kind of know how it's going to get to where it's going to get. But gets there is cool.
There have been so many like demonic possession Catholic Church movies this year. It's insane.
I know. It's kind of it's definitely the it horror genre right now, you know?
Yeah. I don't know how people still find that scary. Like, they're all, yeah. Like, what?
Yeah.
No one's really done anything new with it that I can see.
No. And it's, you know, it's always now too, it's really big to do contorted bodies and, you know, the stuff that's in like almost every horror film now. And that's what I watched this week. Corinne sent us some Showtime stuff that I haven't listened to yet, but here it is.
Hey nerds, Corinne here for another installment of Showtime, and also just to let you know that I am still around. Not as active, but I am still around. Apologies to anybody who follows me on Twitter. Your girl just went down the Star Wars rabbit hole, so there's that. speaking of Star Wars, because apparently it's like the only thing I talk about these days, I do still have my Phantom Menace review. It's over a month old at this point, but I figured I would share that with you guys. But before that, real quick, I wanted to give my thoughts on the first half of The Acolyte. As of recording this, we have gotten 4 of the 8 episodes so far. I'll admit, I was not a big fan of the first two. I was just kind of like, okay, I don't know. It just felt like Star Trek Discovery to me. And I don't know if it was like the production value or just the way it was written or paced or something. It just felt a little off. But then the third episode pretty much hooked me. And then, of course, the episode that came out last night, episode 4, was, you know, it ended on a big cliffhanger. And I was like, okay, well, I'm definitely hooked now. So my roommate and I have been watching it, and we're already like trying to plan out like next Tuesday night, like, what are we going to do? So I'm definitely a fan of Star Wars continuing to do these weekly drops, but specifically at like prime time, like US time. I know that when The Bad Batch was dropping new episodes, it would come out like 1 a.m. Mountain Time, midnight Pacific Time. And of course, a lot of folks overseas really appreciate that because it comes out like prime time, their time. But I'm like, I mean, it would be nice if it came out, you know, not at 1 a.m. in the morning, or not. Yeah, anyway, but you get it. So I'm liking these weekly drops and weekly drops at prime time. So if Star Wars, Marvel, whoever, Disney Plus people, if they keep doing that, I think that will really help. Because, you know, it makes it more of like a water cooler kind of moment. Seeing everybody on Tuesday night being like, oh, Acolyte. So far, again, it was a rocky start, but I'm hooked now. So I want to see how the rest of this plays out. So should be fun. All right. So now here is my Phantom Menace review. Again, I know it's over a month old at this point, but I felt like I should share it. So here is my review of the 25th anniversary edition of The Phantom Menace. Enjoy. Hey nerds, Corinne here for another installment of Showtime, where I tell you all about something cool I've been watching this week. As I said last time, I went and saw The Phantom Menace for the 25th anniversary re-release, and I actually had a pretty fun time. I haven't seen it in maybe 5 years. I think I watched it when we did Filmsplosion 1999, because I'm pretty sure it was my number one that year, so I must have rewatched it. I haven't seen it on the big screen, I don't think, since, I don't know, maybe since it first came out. But yeah, it was actually a lot of fun. It held up both better and worse than I would have thought. I was actually surprised at how quick that opening 40, 45 minutes is, you know, between when, you know, the opening and then by the time they get to Tatooine. And even Tatooine, I was like, okay, now we're going to, like, really slow down. Like, this is where, you know, it all just kind of comes to a grinding halt. And actually, no, like, it slowed down a little bit, but it did keep a fairly brisk pace up until we got to the pod racing scene. And I did notice that there were some new shots added into the pod racing sequence, by the way. And I think that part of the reason why... I'm going to say I like the pod racing sequence, but I think that a lot of people don't like it because up until that point, I don't think we've had a scene that's lasted longer than like 3 minutes. And now we get this fairly prolonged sequence because even the pod racing by itself is, I don't know what, like 9-10 minutes. But then if you account for all of the like preparation, you know, like all the conversations in the staging area, all the conversation, you know, the bedding and everything beforehand. It's a fairly long sequence. I think the actual pod racing itself is well done. And of course, I mean, I'm like, I'm not necessarily on the edge of my seat, but I was like, I was entertained. I was like, you know, I know how this plays out already, but okay. You know, I'm along for the ride. And the first part of the movie... Still not entirely sure how the taxation of trade routes leads to the Trade Federation invades Naboo, but I understand it's like, we just needed a confrontation, or we just needed this conflict so that Palpatine could use the Queen as a pawn to gain more political power in the Senate and become Supreme Chancellor. It's like, I get that on a grand scale,
still confused on a micro level of, like, how exactly, like, taxing trade routes causes the Trade Federation to invade Naboo. Okay, and also, why is the Supreme Chancellor sending Jedi Knights? Don't the Jedi Knights kind of go themselves? I don't know how that works. So, yeah. As far as, like, you know, once we got to Coruscant, I was like, okay, like, I was really entertained by all the scenes with, like, Ian McDiarmid. You know, he does a very good balance of, like, being the kind of emperor-to-be figure where he's, like, kind of sinister. Like, you can definitely tell, like, there's more to him. There's more to him than meets the eye, you know, very Transformers. But he holds back just enough that you can understand why everybody around him thinks he's just this, like, kindly old man, and he means well, and he's, you know, he's rooting for us, and he's on our side, and he's gonna get stuff done. And in fact, no, he's not, and he's out for his own power, his own political leverage. But yeah, when he's talking about, like, oh, here come the bureaucrats, and they're gonna really bog things down, and I'm like, bro, that's you. You're the bureaucrat. No, I'm just kidding. Well, I mean, he is, but yeah. Yeah, and then when we get to the Four Strand battle there at the very end, and it kind of held up worse than I remember when I was, like, I mean, I remember going to see this in the theater several times when I was a kid. And by the way, shout out to my poor parents for having to take me to this movie so many times. But the battle at the end, like, I liked the pod racing, obviously. I liked the battle at the end, but now looking back as an adult, I'm like, man, the music, the Duel of the Fates music carries so much of that, you know, all the battles and everything at the end, especially the lightsaber fight. I'm not gonna nitpick the choreography because other people do that. And also, I don't think it's fair because it's like, you can nitpick just about anything in any movie. But I do think that there are certain decisions of, like, how the fight plays out that, you know, like, the music makes the fight feel so much more grand and epic than it actually is. But there is, like, the one shot where, so, like, Obi-Wan falls, and he kind of looks up and he sees Qui-Gon going off with Darth Maul, and I'm like, you know what, that shot, like, something about that shot just feels so heavy, because of course we know what happens with where Qui-Gon dies, and it's like, that was the last time that, you know, this separation between them, like, that's never, he's never gonna be able to get over that, you know what I mean? Like, you're never gonna be able to close that gap because Qui-Gon dies. Also, just the tiny little things that happen, that it's like, oh, like the droid that hits Anakin's fighter, causing it to go into the droid control ship. I'm like, oh, so that just changed the fate of the whole galaxy right there, along with the fact that there's this, like, little notch or something that Obi-Wan's able to hold on to after he falls into the pit, after Darth Maul knocks him back, and he, like, grabs onto this, I don't know what it is, some kind of, like, a sensor, maybe, but he's just holding onto it until he just does the flip over Darth Maul, which, yeah, that kind of, like, again, when I was a kid, it really was like, oh, that's so cool, and it was like, I guess the reason Darth Maul wasn't expecting it is because he forgot about Qui-Gon's lightsaber. So he figured, like, okay, Obi-Wan's going to come at me, but I'm going to just, like, slice him. And then I don't know how that, yeah. It's like, yeah, why didn't Darth Maul just attack him? Why did he let him just flip over him? And then the whole fact that Darth Maul comes back later in the Clone Wars. So it's like, so Darth Maul gets cut in half, falls hundreds of feet down a shaft, and ends up surviving for, like, 10 years. But Qui-Gon gets stabbed in the stomach, and he dies. I mean, I know they say, like, oh, revenge or vengeance or whatever, like, kept him alive. It's like, sure. I mean, I can imagine that Qui-Gon being the kind of, you know, paragon of virtue that he's supposed to be, not that he is, because he's definitely, like, shady about, like, oh, well, you know, kind of ends justify the means with, like, Anakin and slavery and everything, but he is supposed to be this, like, Jedi Knight, this paragon of virtue, so I can understand why he's, like, there are potentially, you know, whether it's force healing or medical care or whatever, you know, maybe he senses like, no, this is my time. Like, I'm supposed to go. Poor Obi-Wan. I did feel bad for him because he gets sidelined so much in the like middle third of the movie. And then, you know, because Qui-Gon's off with Anakin and everything. And then he comes back and Qui-Gon's like, yeah, train the boy. Like, I don't have any parting words for you other than train the boy. It's like, okay. But yeah, somehow better and worse than I remember it. It is kind of weird to think, like, this is a Star Wars movie? Like, it feels so different than the rest of the prequels. And I think, I was pointing this out to Jerry, it's like, they shot so much of this on location. You know, they Tatooine, and they had Italy, I think, when they shot at Naboo, for Naboo. And, yeah. Like I said, both better and worse than I remember it being a kid. Because I definitely liked The Phantom Menace a lot when I was a kid. I don't remember if there were a lot of people who were hating on it at the time, but if there were, I was definitely a defender of it. And in a way, I still am, but yeah. It was fun to see it on the big screen, and I'm sure that in 3 years when, you know, Attack of the Clones has its 25th anniversary, I will probably be in the theater to go see that. So that's where I'm at. I had fun, and now I want to go watch a bunch of, like, prequel memes and you know, clips of, like, the battle droids being, you know, funny in the Clone Wars series, because, of course, in the Phantom Menace, they're very serious, you know, they're very, it's supposed to be a threat, but, of course, later on in the Clone Wars animated series, they're very much not a threat, they're very funny, but anyway, so, yeah, if it's still in the theaters, go see it, I guess, but I had fun. So, all right, nerds, I'll talk to you guys next time about something. And until then, keep it real, nerds. Bye.
Corinne, you rascally rabbit. I don't know what I'm
you
saying.
You scamp.
Yeah, you scamp. Cool. Next week, we're seeing A Quiet Place Day One. So make sure you look out for that episode. Remember, we'll be at Denver Fan Expo July 4th through the 7th. Make sure you stop by and say hi. See our panel July 4th at 6 p.m. in room 202. We'll be talking about the case for physical media.
No, it's in room 603. Our booth is 202.
Okay. So, oh, thank you, Brad. Thanks for clarifying that. Especially for people who are listening to this now. until next time. We'll see you at the movies.
Well, a real nerd knows who shot. A real nerd can follow the plot. And a real nerd will give out all the gods. Lights, camera, action. Real nerds.
Thanks for listening to Real Nerds Podcast, a Nebulous Visions production. Stream or download episodes, read articles at realnerdspodcast.com. Stream us on Apple or Google Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, or iHeartRadio. Follow us on Facebook, Real Nerds Podcast. Twitter and Instagram, at Real Nerds. Watch us on YouTube, Real Nerds Podcast. Email us at realnerds@gmail.com. Call us at 720-6NERDS5. Thank you to Sparks Mandrill, Mike at Plan 9 Studios, and Bolognium for all of our groovy theme songs. And that's how you fucking do it.